I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, I'm Emily from Newcastle and you're listening to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything. My question is, if you could hear one song for the first time again, as if you've never heard it before, what song would you choose? Okay, here comes the show. And remember, question everything.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast where myself, comedian, writer, and occasional actor, Dame Baptiste, my producer friend, Howard Cohen, aka The Hizzer.
Hello.
And a mix of very special guests pose the questions that need to be asked. And we're talking everything from...
Well, we're talking everything from Emily from Newcastle's question. This is a good one. If you could hear one song again for the first time, what song would it be? Dane, that's a pretty... I'm a fan of that one. I'm going to go for It's All Right, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding by Bob Dylan, which I smoked some of those funny things and lyrics blew my mind. So there you go. There's my one such, for you,
such
Dane.
Such an ambivalent term of I smoked some funny things, Howard.
Well, those funny green things that I had at the time in my life.
Yeah,
well,
be more specific, Howard. You can't just play it out. You've been talking about PCP for all we know.
Oh, God, no. I've only ever smoked... Dust. I know, like in Trading Places. It was weed, and it was just like, wow, the lyrics, just Dylan, he just blew my mind. So what about you, Dave?
I had a very similar experience, but I'd say, try to remember the most recent one. It's tough, but I'd say it would either be, it's hard to pick one, but I'd say it would either be PYT by Michael Jackson.
Okay, interesting.
It's going to be three now. Then there's another song called Take It In Blood by Nas,
which is just mentioned like on this podcast before.
Yeah, because it's just like it's an amazing stream of consciousness. But I'd say if I have to choose, that's a shortlist, but the main one I would say that I remember most vividly would be I Love You by Dizzy Rascal.
Very good.
Because I heard that song and I was like, who the hell is this? I was like, I don't know who the hell this is, what's wrong with this kid, but he is going to be a fucking superstar.
He was. Well, great question there. Suffice to say, on this podcast, we ask and answer all the questions, don't we, Dane?
Absolutely, no question. They're too big, too small, too lowbrow or highbrow. And if you like the show, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify and you'll never miss an episode. Or subscribe to us on Acast, the world's biggest podcast network, where you can hear all the very special answers from all our very special guests asking very special questions. With that being said, on today's show is an inspirational and iconic podcaster, writer, and comedian. He's one of the creators of the legendary TV shows Takeover TV, The Adam and Joe Show, and the live comedy show Bug. He is the host of his own podcast, one of the most successful podcasts in the UK, and he was named Podcast Champion at the British Podcast Awards in 2017. In 2020, he published his first book, Ramble Book, which has gone on to be an Audible bestseller, and he will be touring a show based on the same aforementioned book in 2021. Suffice to say, it is the amazing Mr. Adam Buxton.
Hey, hello. Thank you very much for that introduction. I would say that calling Takeover TV legendary is stretching the definition of legendary to an extremely
I'm going to tell you that for my generation of TV viewing, who then went on to try and work in television, we still talk about it. Lots of people still talk about that show. And that's kind of, Dane, that's kind of legendary status, isn't it?
Absolutely. And also, we're using digital media, Adam, so hyperbole is the order of the day. So it's like, you know, sometimes I've seen people like see a baby dip its own French fries into barbecue sauce and people go, this is everything. So there you go. So the bar's been set very low anyway. So it's very easy to say that it's legendary. It's a legendary. Takeover TV is a legendary show. Very easy to say good. So.
Yeah, but Adam and Joe show. I mean, that come on. You'd agree that
absolutely,
absolute
easily.
Legendary status.
Easily, you
know? Sure. Easily. No, I'm taking all the other compliments on face value. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. Look, and I'm just saying when the Adam and Joe show came on, I could have very easily been watching some softcore pornography on a German channel on cable. I could have done that. I could have been trying to watch reruns of Eurotrash, but that's how good that show was for me. So.
And did you have a song, Adam, just related to our lovely question from our listener that you would love to hear again just for the first time?
I was thinking about that. I think that I've had various kind of spiritual experiences with songs at various points in my life. And it's an amazing thing. Like, I really can chart my life by all the wonderful kind of almost out of body experiences I've had communing with a song that hits you just at the right moment. Or maybe, you know, you've had some jazzy wine or whatever it happens to be, and everything, that's the planets align, and it is the closest that I get to feeling like I'm having an out of body experience, you know?
Mm.
I mean, I really mean that without hyperbole. And
I feel the same way. Radiohead, when I was a kid, when I was 15 and I heard Radiohead or something, like, I was like, I don't know, there's loads of stuff that I remember in my life defining my life.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is how it's supposed to work, I think. I think
the last couple that I can remember like that are, well, there's one by the Doobie Brothers, and it's called Another Park, Another Sunday. And I was watching, like, I was sort of flicking through TV channels one afternoon and ended up just watching this documentary about the Doobie Brothers. And they played a little clip of this song. And I was like, wow, I thought I knew the Doobie Brothers. I haven't heard that one. It's a massive one of theirs. Anyway, I got obsessed with it and then went through a phase of just listening to it for every night for a few weeks. And just every night was on the money. And I had a similar thing with Pyramids by Frank Ocean.
Big, yeah, really song.
Really sort of song. Epic track.
Yeah.
I just think that is, what a thing that is. So I felt completely transported. All the different sections, especially the kind of when it goes all, like the first section of Pyramids is all kind of bangy bangy. And electronic.
Is that the official term for?
I think that's the official term used by old.
Yeah,
people.
Yeah, or boom bap, boom bap.
Okay.
Yeah, the boom bap. Yeah, yeah.
And then, how would you describe this? The second section, the kind of woozy.
Yeah, it's kind of like a minor chord synth kind of thing. It's kind of like that. What's the word I'm looking for? It's like melancholic kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's kind of crescendos and stuff. I really like that style of music because, like, Pyramids is a great example of that. So the producer Darkchild. A lot of his stuff is like using minor chords, and it's almost like you have like this descending crescendo in minor chords, and it almost like a synth, but like wailing kind of thing, which I really enjoy as well. So yeah, Pyramid, Pyramid is a good example of that.
Michael Kiwanuka's Cold Little Heart is about a 10 minute. If you've never heard that 10 minute version, that's another one of those transcendental experiences.
Woods by Bon Iver as well.
Oh, very okay, good. Yeah.
I really like that one. And then when it was sampled for Lost in the World by Kanye West as well, I really like that because then he had the coda with Jill Scott Heron doing the Who Will Survive in America poem from My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, which to me is still Kanye's best album.
You know I know barely any Kanye, so I should get across.
That's the one. If you're going to pick one, I would say go for My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. So I think for me that was like the... apex of his kind of collaborative creativity because it does feature like Bon Iver, LaRue on there.
Beyonce's in there. Nicki Minaj is in there, I think.
Yeah, Nicki Minaj, Raekwon is in there.
It's an amazing album.
Really good.
Really well done. But, there you go. Our lovely listener got more than she bargained for there. Many answers. But it's probably time for a question, isn't it, Dane, as the format of this show dictates?
Absolutely, Adam, as our very esteemed guest, who is more than au fait with the How Podcasts Work, we invite you to ask our first question, which I'd like to discuss for 15 minutes of some change, and then Howard would like to do the same. And then lather, rinse, repeat. I'd like to ask a direct question towards you for 15 minutes or so, which we'd like to discuss. And then once we are all done doing our questioning and our answering, then we would like for our listeners to find out about your good works, past, present, and future. How does that sound?
That sounds good, but, you know, don't worry too much about the good works bit at the end.
I think it's okay. Leaves us more time for questions.
Yeah, exactly.
Or body of work, and then people can judge for themselves.
Sure. I mean, you know, if people are interested, I'm happy to talk about whatever. Yeah. And... speaking of talking about whatever, this might be a bit of a bummer. So I will give you alternatives and you can choose as you see fit. But my question initially, my sincere question is, can you learn to have a good death? Now, I am currently, I'm 52 years old. My father died at the end of 2015. My mother died last year. And so death has been on my mind ever since people that I loved started dying. They weren't the first people that I loved who died, but that really made me start thinking about it a lot more than I had before then. I kind of launched into this question. I did say that it was a bit of a bummer and you could choose something else.
I like it. I think we keep going this way. We keep on this thread.
All right. Like okay. It. Well, we'll try and keep it non-depressing. I mean, I do feel as if I have some non-depressing things to say and thoughts about it. Suppose my thoughts have been about like, surely there is a way to get yourself ready a little bit more than most people do. I felt that both my dad and my mum, he was fine at the end. He was quite old, 92 nearly. And it wasn't like he was in agony or anything. You know, pain management is pretty good these days. And that aspect of death is not too terrifying, I don't think. Obviously, this does not apply to everyone. I'm talking entirely on the basis of my own experience with these things. But my mum was a bit younger and she just got fed up. She just didn't like the indignity of aging and nothing about it was pleasurable for her. And she was a bit younger. She was just over 80 when she checked out. And again, like the final, the actual final moments, neither of them were too bad. But I just felt like the run-up to the whole thing could have been a bit better. And I thought, like, I would like to be across that a little bit more and put some thought into it. You know, like the whole concept of bucket lists, only became a thing in 2007. I Googled this. I assumed that the idea of a bucket list, i.e. making a list of all the things you want to do before you kick the bucket or die. I sort of thought, well, that's been around for years, hasn't it? But apparently not. It was coined with that film, 2007, The Bucket List, starring Morgan Freeman and Jack Nicholson. That's when that concept entered the consciousness.
Wow.
But I'm always surprised by the fact that, well, I guess I'm not surprised. It's fair enough. You know, it's always things like, I want to go skydiving. I want to see the Northern Lights. I want to take an African safari, whatever it might be, you know. But you don't really get too many people putting on their bucket list, I want to learn some strategies for embracing death.
And it's one of those things as well, like, I guess is... it's to do with lead up you're talking to about, right? Isn't it that those kind of weeks that you've, you know, let's say, you know, you've got kind of like a 6 week window. Yeah. And this is always turned into like movie nonsense, right, Dane? As in like you say, that 2007 film, it's like, hey, it's some kooky thing and maybe I'll learn something. But why is it not just common practice to think a little bit more about how you might enjoy the last bit of your life?
Well, I guess it's... mortality, when you juxtapose it with the other routines within human life, it's I think it's a very powerful one, because you know, you could argue when you are pondering something like mortality, it kind of makes a lot of your other activities you do in the run up to your life kind of folly. Because what you tend to find is when people, it suggests to people that they are now aware of their mortality and how long they may have left to live. Then when they do think about their other preoccupations in life, they seem very small in comparison to the fact that you'll no longer be around. So I guess maybe that's the part of it, is that people become so entrenched in daily routine of capital gain or material gain that these are distractions that allow them to forget that, you know, one day they're going to be dead. I mean, and also human beings have several institutions or ideas of rationalization that they use to make them not think about the fact that one day they'll be dead, whether it's, you know, something on one scale of being cosmetic surgery where you feign the aesthetic of being eternally young, or at the other extreme where it's maybe not thinking about the process of dying physically, but more the afterlife. And then I guess having a renewed or inspirited belief in an afterlife.
But learning to have a good death is a really lovely, specific thing, right? Because it's like, you know, none of us are planning on dying anytime soon, the three of us here, you know,
Unless well, it, but maybe is that the problem, though, Howard, that we don't prepare to die? Because, you know, we look at human beings or as mammals or how we work compared to our other counterparts. You know, a lot of people argue that we...
But if you get to that point, though, where you're like, you know, getting to a certain age where you, and maybe there's something up or, you know, you're kind of starting to think that, oh, God, this, you know, I don't know how long I'm going to last. You could start to like, you know, I've got like friends, like I want to make sure I have one last drink with them. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's kind of where my mind went when Adam said that question is like, you know, I still quite like watching Frasier. Even though I've seen it a billion times, I'd probably like to have a little Frasier marathon one day. I mean, these are quite low bars I'm setting here, but for me, life is full of simple things, right?
Or rationalization strategies that maybe should be a part of human life and a part of existential thought anyway. Because when you think about it, whether it's today, 5 to 10, 30 years down the line, the certainty is that at some point you will die. So really, maybe it should be a part of our you know, as of an existential or human practice, whether it's through religious means or just through like normal psychological well-being, for us to ponder what we would do if we would die tomorrow. I think there's maybe this...
But it's the surprise bit, isn't it?
In the same way that with evolution, there's like a missing link between, you know, Homo sapiens and Homo erectus. There's obviously a blind spot between death and the afterlife. And when I say afterlife, in terms of not just in terms of you having an existence after die, your corporal body dies, but more, you know, based on legacy. And you know, your
imprint. But I just feel like, you know, I look back on like, for example, Adam, like I remember the last phone call I had with my dad, right? I don't know if you've had these memories with you talking about your parents passing, and you know, I remember the last phone call with my dad. He called me up and he was so angry about how Arsenal had got knocked out of the Champions League. And he was moaning to me about Alexander Kleb. I don't know if you follow football, but there was a player who played for Arsenal for a couple of years, a Belarusian guy called Alexander Kleb. He was not a legend in Arsenal's history.
Didn't he?
Yeah. And so my dad was moaning to me for like, it was like a 5-minute phone call. And that was the last time I ever spoke to my dad. And Alexander Kleb
killed your dad.
Weirdly, my dad.
What a shitbag.
Do you know what? I could actually send you a picture. I'll put it on Twitter that a couple of years later, Arsenal started putting these little plaques outside for fans, like on the floor outside the Emirates. It's like a nice tiled of lots of messages. People send love messages to whatever. And I just put one for my dad there that said, Jeff Cohen never rated player.
Oh, no.
and then it went viral at some point on like some website, which he would have been very proud of. But like that weirdness, right, Adam, I don't know how you feel about that weirdness of like, that was the last moment, and you kind of feel like that to learn how to have a good death is tough.
No, it's really, and you have to, I hope that you didn't, I mean, I guess that was nothing upsetting. It's not like he was imparting some upsetting bit of information about you or saying that you had disappointed him or something like that. That would be hard to deal with. And I've known people that has happened to, and it's tough to get beyond something like that when a person's last words are angry or bitter or hurtful. I mean, a lot of the time they're not in a good place themselves, or they're altered or addled or medicated, or there's any number of reasons why they might say something that you shouldn't hold on to in that.
Really, really good point, especially because like so much of our communication is nonverbal anyway. And because I feel like it's been more of a function of considering how I lead my life has helped me to rationalize the idea of dying a lot more. One of the ways you are able to, you know, have a good death is by, like I said, imprinting positively on people, so that rather than leaving with any kind of grudges or any kind of parting comments that would be negative, because what that means is, irrespective of whether you lean towards creationism or science in terms of what you think about afterlife, like with any kind of memory or emotion, however you're evoked in the human mind, that energy that you left with is what's going to be conjured amongst people as well. So how do you want people to feel when they discuss you? Because that energy that is created is going to be your last remnant, or the closest thing to your physical form within the physical world is what people do when they think of you. So,
right.
That could be a way to have a good death, I'd say, in some ways, is to leave behind
a good feeling, because you know. And because and that's also based on the biological idea that human beings thrive positively off of dopamine and serotonin releases. So if thinking of you makes them happy, they're more inclined to do that. And so you're able, so you may not be here physically, but there'll be a good death because you're able to kind of endure in that respect.
Definitely have a will as well, by the way.
I got my will sorted. I'm doing all those things. Okay. I'm ticking those kind of practical boxes. But yeah, I do feel as if I've got to start thinking, because for many people, religion is the thing that does this, you know. That's what gets you in the right headspace and you cling on to whatever your beliefs are in that area about whether there's an afterlife or whatever. That gives you comfort and it gives you some sort of structure to the process of dying, or if someone has died that you love, then grieving that person. And so there's a meaning there for those people who believe in that stuff. But I'm not religious, so I don't have that. I've got to do some more reading. But my experience of it, as I say, is from my parents, and also from, there was a guy called Mark Colvin. He was an Australian journalist and broadcaster who I didn't really know much about, but when I was on Twitter, I'm not on Twitter anymore, but back in the day, he got in touch with me on Twitter to say that he listened to my podcast, he liked it. I didn't know who he was. Turns out he was kind of a great journalist in Australia. And he died in 2017. I mean, he had been out in Rwanda covering the genocide there in 1994, and he contracted an autoimmune disease out there in the process of covering that crisis out there. And thereafter, he lived for a couple of decades with extreme pain and disability, kidney failure, hip replacements. Anyway, he soldiered on and he was incredibly positive. And his last tweet, like days before he died, was, "It's all been bloody marvelous." And I just was so knocked out by that this guy had this extremely positive way of thinking of his life and how he wanted to express himself as he faced death, even after all the pain that he had experienced personally, physical and emotionally, and all the things that he had seen in the course of being a reporter, and a news journalist, covering the genocide in Rwanda. Can you imagine what that would have done to him and the people who saw that and experienced that? Hard to be positive about anything after that, I would imagine. And so,
well, you can schedule those tweets now, Adam, yeah. Potentially, if we...
That's a good idea. Start composing something inspirational
it's
right
now. It's an interesting
now.
Point about digital media, though, Hal, because, I mean, another method as well is that, like, it's... I know for me, I went through a very long period of procrastination before I began doing comedy, I think, which is most part of the journey for most people, of finding reasons why you can only dip your toe in and not go the whole way. Mm. And one of the things that pushed me was thinking creativity is one of the only remaining methods that human beings have to chronicle their existence. You may die here physically, but your ideas and your concepts and whatever... medium that is used to communicate ideas, whether it's from consciousness to your voice, from your voice to another human ear, to the ear to consciousness, these are maybe just waves or methods that we're not aware of yet. So it's like, when we think of an afterlife, it's like, for me, it's because it's just our current limited understanding of death, which makes it a lot easier to come to terms with, because what does that death mean? Because by the same token, all of the carbon-based cells that make up your being will in itself contribute to helping another organism, which we say is circle of life, or if you have children, your genes are passed on then. Mm. Your existence right now is the culmination of, you know, thousands of years of evolution from your immune system otherwise to get to the point of you having experience with Adam Buxton. But there along your genome, there may be just one acid base that's come from preceding generations, which, while it manifests in a way you might react to something, even the way that your nose twitches when you smell something, that's still the makeup of thousands of years of life that have gone on before you that still endures. So it's really, I guess, more of our understanding of what we refer to as death. Like, in a world where nothing else is binary anymore, are we still contextualizing existence along these lines of life and death? Because the matter that makes you up doesn't disappear. Energy cannot be created or destroyed. So that's infinite in itself. So
there's a couple of farts I've done in the last couple of days as well that are going to be around for some time.
Exactly. They are. And not only that, they are going to maybe the catalyst for someone else's life. Yeah. You never know. There may be a life form out there that subsist solely on gaseous methane. And, you know,
it's all possible. But I mean, can you learn to have a good death? What a question. Listeners, please get in touch. And Adam,
good question.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thank you for sharing that one.
Well, we absolutely failed to answer it, but there you go. I mean...
Well, I think we've agreed, yes, we're working on the solution. Yes.
Yeah.
We'll get back to you. We'll come back to that.
We're just trying to work out what is death, yeah. I guess.
Right. I mean, it's a big old question.
Yeah.
But, we've started.
But we did.
People need to talk about it more, though. I do think that. I feel as if, like, one thing that seems to come up a lot more, like my friend Mark Colvin, is that many people towards the end of their lives, when they are staring at death, are less terrified and panicky than you might expect. The real fear of death for most people comes in worrying about it and anticipating it. But there have been studies done where people are writing about how they feel when they are hours or days from death, and it's far less downbeat than you might imagine.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we could easily revisit this. Again, Dave,
I'll get
right?
back to you when I
let's get back to it. But every human being's going to visit at some point. How that's the main thing why we should discuss it so much.
Exactly.
It's strange that we have created so many systems to kind of, I suppose, meander around the topic. Like, you know, it's something that we don't.
And a great chance to reference Carrie Ann Lloyd, and her incredible podcast, which I'm sure you guys
absolutely
heard of. But my question, and weirdly Dane's question, because we sometimes confer on our questions before the show, Adam, are kind of interweaved a little bit. So the rest of this episode, we're gonna talk about something in the creative world, because, like, for me, I mean, I had your VHS, Adam, of the Adam and Joe show. I had a VHS of that, and I would sit with my mates and watch that again and again. And if there's any listeners out here who don't remember that show, not that you obviously gone on to do many excellent things in your career, there was something about that show at that moment that just felt like very, very special to the people who were fans of it. Right, Dane? Like, it was just like, yeah, it's like something you couldn't bottle in some ways. And I think my question to you, having, you know, had such a kind of wonderful career, is, do you ever feel you are losing your imagination? Because that was, I would say, the single most imaginative show. I can reference some other imagination. I think Rick and Morty is a show that people get very excited about because it's so imaginative, right?
Yeah, I would say that Rick and Morty is a genuinely imaginative show in a way that I wouldn't really characterize our show as being, the Adam and Joe show, because what we were doing was essentially a pop culture review show. So we were responding to things in hopefully an imaginative way. Like, we were trying to imagine ways of talking about films and TV shows and everyday life that wasn't totally boring and, you know, was fun in itself, like the actual ways that we were, because we were sort of taking the piss out of things a lot of the time, but hopefully the way we were doing it wasn't completely negative or destructive. Often they were things that we liked, and that's kind of the way we were. I think that's the way a lot of friends are. They get together and they take the piss out of things that they love, really. Like pop stars, we always took the piss out of David Bowie, even though we all loved him. but we were aware that there were certain aspects of him and his career that were a little bit ludicrous, as there are for any, you know, superstar or any creative person who does anything interesting. There's always going to be some aspects of that that are a bit stupid and shit. So, yeah, we were doing that. As far as whether I'm worried that I am getting less imaginative, yeah, I never really thought of myself as a very imaginative person. I wouldn't speak for Joe. I think Joe is probably more imaginative. He's a better storyteller in that way. So that's why he's better equipped to be a director, a film director, and someone who writes actual stories. I've never been very good at that. I've been more of a kind of a commentator. That's my thing. And an observer of everyday life and the way that people are and the way they interact. That's what I really like. So it's not so much imaginative. In fact, when my children were young and at bedtime, every now and again, they would say, "Tell me a story, Daddy." And I'd say, "All right, well, I'd find it really hard to make up stories."
Element of comedian-based cynicism within that kind of precedes it as well, because you might start a story and be like, "I don't want to tell my kids that. They'll end up stupid. Like, I don't want to say that to them."
Exactly.
That, yeah, it's like I'm not validating that kind of idea.
Yeah, hacky stories.
Yeah.
No, I would usually end up going with some variation on the Star Wars story. You know, it would be like, "Well, there was a farm boy," and then it would be like, I can't quite remember the story exactly when it comes down to it. And then he was living with his aunt and his uncle, and these baddies came. I can't remember why, but they ended up burning the aunt and uncle. Oh no, they just, anyway, so he found his way to he was on a space station and he had some...
I mean, this is kind of reminding me of the Adam and Joe show here. the way you did the films was always, for me, one of the hot... I always never forget Seven. You guys did Seven, right? The Brad Pitt film. I still can't get my head around how you actually pulled that. I mean, it's such a unique thing to pull off because it's such a horrific experience watching that film, turning it into comedy.
I think that's what works so well about the show, and it's such a part of the endeavor. Is it's, you know, human beings will ponder how, you know, the events that took place in Seven, how someone could commit these kind of atrocities, or someone could be so apathetic. So it's a great endeavor to kind of be like, well, what if we looked at it this way? And yeah, it's always good to kind of offer that.
I suppose also it was an era where kind of sketch shows. I don't know. It's going to be weird to consider that a sketch show. I don't know if you guys ever thought about it that, but like, you know, the Ken Corder stuff, which was a lot of the time hidden camera, or not hidden camera, like a prank. It was kind of a pranky
sort
thing.
Of pranky.
Or...
It was like a very vanilla Sacha Baron Cohen type exercise, i.e. you create a character and then you insert him into various stupid situations.
Yeah, like short film shoots with real people.
Yeah,
I remember
really
one thing you guys did, which I'll never forget. I reference it because I work in the slightly bizarre world of television. I often bring it up, which is that the thing where you pretended you were working for changing rooms.
yeah, that was fun. That was really good.
And you put like a mannequin instead of a light fitting. There were lights coming out of the mannequin's mouth or something. And they were,
we had this guy and he had agreed. He was approached by the production company and told that we were from a makeover show, TV makeover show. And his boyfriend set him up, in fact, and said, "Oh yeah, he'll be fine with this." And so we turned up to the guy's house and they just moved in there. So they hadn't really decorated yet, which was good. And then we showed up, me and Joe, in the morning. The bloke buggered off for the rest of the day. And then we just trashed the front room. We just drilled a load of holes in the door and just threw paint at the walls. As you say, we had a mannequin that we sprayed gold and hung it up from the ceiling, draped some fairy lights.
A collection
around.
Of CDs that were like a mirror.
Yeah, we stuck CDs a load of CDs together and hung them on the wall and said it was a mirror. And put some greengrocer's grass on the floor and just made it terrible.
It was so good. Honestly, absolutely so
but we
memorable.
Did it so badly as well because we were under time pressure. So he came back and he looked around And he said, yeah, yeah, ha-ha, hmm, it's really interesting. Yeah, yeah. It was cool. But it was fun doing those things because, you know, we had his boyfriend's permission. Like, it wasn't a total...
Right.
We weren't totally stitching him up and
yeah. It wasn't Beatles.
No, and we weren't, you know, we put everything right afterwards. And so no one was getting humiliated or badly embarrassed or shocked. It was mainly an excuse. Mm. It was mainly a way of providing a bit of an edge for an otherwise fairly tame idea, which was to take the piss out of makeover shows. You know what I mean? And if you introduce that pranky element into it, however small.
It stuck with me for about 20-odd years now, Adam. So I obviously was doing something right. And I mean, that imagination, like I say, when I name all these things, like to me, it's like one of the most imaginative shows I ever saw, Dane. Like it was just unique. And it's kind of interesting that Dane's question, which we're going to kind of combine, in, I think, together because they're very linked, that you've gone on to do so many things. And I think Dane had a particular point he wanted to ask.
Yeah, just because, like, you know, this is my 10th year doing comedy, which has been fun and obviously has provided springboards into a few other creative fields, such as podcasting, some comedy writing. But obviously, yeah, just looking at the kind of broad expanse in terms of your career, is that was it a conscious effort to transcend into, like, you know, music video production and podcasting? Or do you think there's just maybe a natural trajectory that you go at as maybe starting off as a comic or a writer? Just because I also make sure, and me and Howard discuss it all the time, is that, like, you know, without an ego, it's like I want my narrative and ideas to kind of be bigger than comedy. I do love doing comedy, and one of the best parts is that kind of the speed in which you can go from concept to stage and communicate that with an audience. And but at the same time, I feel like digital media has opened up the world so much more that if you are capable of comedic timing or being able to think quite quickly off the cuff and come up with new concepts, especially where I think there's such a... I think the gold rush right now is for human consciousness, whether it's, you know, people who are disillusioned by bipartisan politics or just new ideologues appearing on social media, not all of them necessarily positive, but definitely engaging. Mm-hmm. I think it is the time now to create new jobs and new ways of thinking and more nuanced styles of art in terms of how you communicate with people is changing. But I just want to make sure that myself personally, that I'm identifying opportunities if they do arise, or are those things that come along naturally, or do you find as you gain competence in another field, it almost automatically leads on to you entering into another one?
Yeah, I think that's how it works more than anything else. I'm always impressed with people who are able to have goals and to plan things and to say, in 10 years, I want to have a TV show, and 15 years, I want to be starring in a movie, all this kind of stuff. I've never, ever thought like that at all. Partly from a negative point of view of just being too diffident and too, you know, just thinking, fuck, I'm never going to be able to do that shit. But also because I think it's more fun to just see what happens and to make things up as you go along and see what occurs. Because the problem with the planning everything strategy is that it becomes a bit pointless after a while. You're like, yeah, but why do you need to be in a movie? You know, why do you need to have done these things? It's like putting the cart before the horse. You know, surely the idea behind it and the spirit behind it is what's interesting. That's what's going to connect with people, is where is this stuff coming from? And that's not something that you can plan, I think. Most people are just responding to what's happening in their lives and what's happening in the wider world. And if you have a perspective on that that is in any way engaging or interesting, then people will respond to it, I think. And it doesn't really... I think that the least interesting thing is being hugely famous, or as far as I can tell, that just limits everything massively. It limits your own enjoyment of your personal life because you can't do all the things that you used to be able to do before. You've got all this weight of expectation on you. And I mean, the good thing about being famous and winning lots of awards is that in theory, it opens more doors and it makes it possible for you to get more projects off the ground and things like that. But I think the...
In real life, we know it doesn't work that way. Like, when you get nominated in Edinburgh, people aren't like, yay. They're like, why?
That's right.
Why am I here to see you then?
That's right.
It's politics, bullshit. Box ticking.
Yeah. So it's.
Did you feel that at some stage in your life you were kind of chasing a bit more of the kind of the fame game? I guess people would.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know, chasing it, but I had those fantasies, you know. And I definitely thought at one point, okay, I've been on TV now, so people are probably going to offer me lots of things. And it'll just be a question of which one do I want to choose? Do I want a TV show or shall I be in a film, in a nice film? You know, and I was looking at people like Simon Pegg, who are contemporaries of mine and Joe's, and thinking, yeah, there you go. That's probably what's going to happen to me. I'll just be able to do what I want and hang out with Tom Cruise and be in films. And then you get a bit older and you think, oh, actually, it's not, you do have to have something else. You do have to have some real drive and a kind of proper work ethic and more ideas. Yeah, you know, you have to just keep doing it and doing it and doing it. Nothing gets handed to anyone.
I think one of the weird things is focus, right? Yeah. Because like, and I'm not saying this in reference to you or Dane, just generally with creative people is, they're kind of like easily distracted over to the next thing because there's so many promises of opportunity in different possible projects, right? That's must be so, it's such a challenge to deal with.
Yeah, I think the hard thing sometimes is saying no. I mean, I've never found that especially, you know, that's not been a massive problem. I haven't been so overwhelmed with opportunities that it's become an issue. But the thing is that enough trickles in for you to have to be a little bit mindful about what you say yes to. Otherwise, it's quite easy to just sort of subsist on a diet of things that are fun and don't take up too much time. But actually, suddenly 10 years has gone by and maybe you don't have that much to show for it. And then, I mean, I feel as if I'm in that position a little bit now, thinking slightly like, oh, okay. You know, we were talking about death before and I was thinking, you know, starting to think like, how many productive years have I got left really? And knowing as I know now how fast time passes and how it continues to speed up the older I get, I've now got to think a little bit about like, well, okay, I can carry on piddling along the way I have been and it's fun and it's enjoyable, but will I be okay with that in 20 years if I make it another 20 years, you know what I mean? And I hope I will, but there every now and again, you know, you have those moments of vulnerability when you perhaps compare yourself to other people. That's the worst thing, really.
Absolutely.
And and you suddenly think, oh God, what have I done? But then I feel as if I'm getting slightly better at getting beyond that and not, you know, I cry much less at award ceremonies now.
And, you should get invited to award ceremonies, Adam. I'm still waiting for my invite.
Oh no, I'm not. I'm talking about watching them on TV. Sitting on my own and crying and crying.
But it's incredible, isn't it? Because like you know, like I say, for me, I think I've kept the gushing down fairly well, haven't I, Dane? I haven't overgushed at Adam's. But you're like a hero to me, man. Like, I mean, seriously, like, you know, like.
I think that's a good way to think about it as well, is that for however small you think your accomplishments are, there is some kid somewhere in the UK or in the world who's like, I just want to be Adam. And he's comparing himself to you thinking, what am I not getting right? And because it's also subjective.
Well, I had a scenario the other day with my sister-in-law's nephew. So I'm not related to this kid. His name's Max. Hello, Max. If you listen to this episode,
Max.
Hey, Max. And he's been doing this little podcast about Arsenal for his sins. I don't know if he's getting as many listeners as he'd like, but anyway, he was just talking to me about podcasting on WhatsApp, and he was really saying nice things about the podcast. And then I saw my nephew yesterday, and he was like, "Oh, Max keeps talking about how good your podcast is," and that kind of, in a way, that kind of meant more just to think about how this guy, he's like 17. Or 18 now, I don't know, that kind of like, you know, thinking, God, like that one person, when you bottle it down to that, But there's a tiny little thing of someone just being like, yeah, that guy enjoys
it's
that thing you do.
It's the most important thing that if you can provide a parallel between your life and somebody else's, mm-hmm. that, again, going back to our first question, I think is a way of helping us rationalize something like death. I think if we're going to study it, which I think we should be as a part of the human well-being and just giving us a more rounded perspective of the world, is that knowing someone out there is living a life like your own, and having that human exchange, it's one of the most important endeavors of art. Is that I think for everyone, when we speak about art and music and stuff that we enjoyed, it's because it either captured a point in our lives which is very significant, and that was able to underscore it, or it's a way of where it's like, and that's what I say by the same. It's like you can listen to a song and mm-hmm. the emotion that it caused, whether it's like a song that reminds you of a breakup, even if it's very faint, you will still remember the emotion it evokes at the time when you heard it, when your heart was broken in the first place. And, you know, that is a...
Well, I think podcasting offers a really interesting insight into it, because, you know, for the last, however many, 6 years, Adam, that you've been kind of, yeah. you know, wonderfully entertaining the masses. And I'd say playing by your own rule book, as in you're not told by anyone what to do in the show, right? And you make your own adverts, which are potentially as popular as the content of the show, right? People love your jingles and stuff. It's kind of, you know, freedom. I think that's one of the things we're talking about as well, isn't it? That you lose freedom on certain projects, which can then...
Yeah, and it's something maybe you can't put a price necessarily, that where you may not have more dizzying heights of fame and success or plaudits in some ways, it's like one thing you kind of reflect on in your body of work is that it was your choice and the extent to which you did it. Because, you know...
Yeah, that is important, I think. Like, times, every now and again, you have the opportunity to look back over stuff you've done for whatever reason. Maybe you're checking something or writing something. You go down a little bit of a rabbit hole of your own past. And the things that make you cringe are generally the ones where you were overthinking it, or you were trying to be something that you're not. And you're sort of thinking, shit, everyone else is talking about this thing. Everyone's being edgy. Like, I remember times in the 90s when we felt that we should try and be a bit more edgy because we felt we were too kind of nice or not being... dangerous enough or sick enough or, you know, and we'd have a little go. And, you know, this is what led to a lot of soul searching from comedians in the 90s last year when George Floyd and Black Lives Matter and all those conversations, there were a lot of comedians in the 90s who felt that they should be pressing buttons and being a bit edgy. And then, of course, they lived to regret it and were in a weird position where they, you know, they kind of had to apologize or admit that they felt differently or, you know, because...
There should be no institution or there should be no public disposition that stops people from doing that. I think, you know, your artistic growth should run concurrently with your human growth in that.
Absolutely.
You may believe or mistaken, like, you know, I'd like to definitely feel like I'm an egalitarian have solidarity with feminist belief now. But I know when I was 17 or 18, I had a very misguided idea about chauvinism and my place as a cisgender heterosexual man. Not from a place of malice, but it's because of the environment I was in. I would have genuinely thought that I was being benevolent. But it's. I think in terms of like when we speak about people that have had to retrospectively apologize and stuff like that, I think it's... it's a whole other thing. But I think the apology really is... You don't necessarily need to apologize, but it's being open to being able... Like, you know, I just think speaking as a comedian, the most important thing is to take the position of fall. So you're always open to be able to revise technology. I think to revise like your ideology, because I think it's one of the biggest problems with the two biggest schools of thought amongst human beings, whether it's like creationism and science. If we look at these two fields of like study for human beings, is that you could argue that our problem with creationism is that it should embrace more scientific principles in terms of the fact that if you see what is supposedly a truth or a theory within religious texts, that should be open to a methodology, a null hypothesis, testing, and then a re-evaluation so that we can say, we felt initially, based on maybe the socioeconomic makeup of our society, that a creator might take this position on same-sex marriage. Whereas when we look at today's world and we look at like whether it's overpopulation or we look at the amount of children that may need to be adopted, then in a religion that emphasizes selflessness and piousness, then the idea of a same-sex couple adopting a child and giving them love and a stable upbringing makes much more sense if we are promoting a universal love amongst the collective consciousness. By the same token, we would take science, for example, even though science is about exploring the things that make up our existence, as Jeff Goldblum said in Jurassic Park, instead of worrying about whether or not we can, we should think about whether we should.
There you go. I think Jeff Goldblum is not quoted enough in these kinds of discussions.
Particularly from that film.
Exactly. From that film of all things, because, you know, there's a lot of elements of that film where it's about we can marvel at our achievements and our ability to achieve.
It was a documentary, wasn't it?
Well, in some ways.
No, it's absolutely right. Yeah, definitely. It's like...
whether or not we should do it. Like, we take to account climate change, for example, and some of the flooding we're now having in Western Europe. It's like...
Absolutely. All of that. I mean, I think people are gradually trying to have those conversations now, especially with AI and things like that. And I mean,
it's not going anywhere. Now, exactly you say, we are now at the point where we've created new life.
Mm.
And, you know, if people say that humanity destroyed God, like Nietzsche said, God created man and man killed God. Well, AI now.
But what did Jeff Goldblum have to say about it?
What did Jeff Goldblum have to say about it?
I mean, well, he's actually next week on the show, everyone.
Independence Day, and the way we beat the computers was to give them a virus and to upload confusion amongst that alien population in Independence Day, right? And if you maybe think about how the algorithm has affected human consciousness on social media, it's very similar that maybe there is now a ghost in the machine which tells us how to think. And maybe makes us say things we wouldn't normally say or think.
Yes, that's why I'm not on social media anymore.
Well, the fact that you're not on social media means we're even more privileged to have you on this show. And it's been an amazing episode, right, Dane?
Absolutely. I definitely want to make sure we continue this conversation about preparing for a good death. I think that is, I would go so far as to say positive death preparation. That's a premise for a whole new religious belief.
Yeah. There's many people who have written on the subject, and I've read almost nothing. But a book that people keep recommending to me is Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, 1946. Viktor Frankl describes his experiences in a Nazi concentration camp. And those experiences led to him finding meaning during times of suffering and death. People keep mentioning this book to me, and I'm going to get hold of it. But I know that you're very well read, Dane, and I thought maybe you might have come across that one.
But I'm definitely going to look into it.
Howard, I didn't mean to imply that you were less well read than Dane.
Down. Well, do you know what? Actually, Adam, I was actually writing Viktor Frankl down whilst also looking up Jeff Goldblum quotes from Jurassic Park.
I think Viktor Frankl probably wrote it with Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, Life Finds a Way is the one that I was reaching for when it comes to Goldblum in Jurassic Park. Yes. And that might actually apply to
Frankl,
this show.
Frankl, by the way, is spelled Frankl.
Which you should know, Howard.
Lovely. Do you know what? You can spell Frankl a couple of ways before you test my Judaism there, Dane.
Keep it on your toes, Howard. Keep it on your toes.
But Adam, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. I hope I wasn't too dreary and depressing.
I think it was very uplifting. And I think it was for people, you know, especially because you've lost two parents. Rest in peace, we say to your parents as well. And thank Howard's you. Dad. Because and I feel like, dad, you know, people think these are states of being we may grow out of, but losing two parents will make you definitely consider your mortality and existentialism more than anyone because, like, you know, they're the reason you're alive. So when the reason you're alive is no longer alive, it does mean you should have to think about your existence a lot more. So I think it's very useful. Thank you so much for it. And I hope it's been helpful to anyone who is coping with loss that, you know, the stages of grief you may be experiencing or loss, there's nothing wrong with any of them. And you should feel open to communicate those.
And Adam, you said you didn't want to plug anything at the end of the show, so that could just be it then, really.
Yeah, we'll plug the honourable memory of your parents instead.
I'm trying to engage in a radical strategy of non-ambition. Exactly. I'm going to pretend that I am not plugging anything on principle because I'm so brave.
Good. Yeah. I like that. That's good. Well, it's just this minute of the podcast that normally exists, but we'll just. Oh, any plans for the rest of the week? Or
well, I've just been pinged, so my plans.
Oh, so you're not going anywhere?
I'm not
you're
going
not
anywhere
going
for
anywhere.
A while.
I think for anyone who's also isolated, like I said, it would be a good time to think about existentialism and your mortality, but think a way of doing it positively. And
I rewatched Weird Science. That's a good one to chuck out at the end. It's on the iPad.
How was that?
If you're looking for, it's like a really weird, kind of slightly Me Too, sexy Mary Poppins experience. That's a bit questionable. If I'm honest,
I'm
with
sure
you.
It is.
But it's interesting that you know people are opposed to the idea of people electively transcending into women, but if two American dudes make one, that's okay.
I'm sure it's not okay anymore. I mean,
it's probably
even at the time, I remember thinking, I don't know if this is okay. But that was the atmosphere of that film, though, wasn't it? It was slightly like every dirty teenage boy's secret fantasy suddenly becoming reality. That was the
bit like this podcast.
That was the premise. But teenage boys' fantasies should not be aired publicly.
They really shouldn't. No, that's a now. That,
what a final lesson for the listeners. That's a good way to go.
You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste. For more from Dane, go to danebaptiste.co.uk or follow him on Twitter at DaneBapTweets or Instagram at DaneSnapTeast.
Our guest was Adam Buxton. Do you know what? You can't follow Adam on any social media. He's packed it in. So go and check out his amazing podcast.
The show is produced by me, Howard Cohen. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheHowardCohen. The show is mixed and mastered by Audio Culture. You can follow Audio Culture on Instagram at @WeAreAudioCulture. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at @DBQEPodcast. Thanks to Polly, Gelly and the Acast team for all their support. Thanks for listening, guys. And remember, question everything.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.